when I walked in to meet my family for the first time, they had all stood in a line. I just went down the line and they all hugged me. And then they had a cake made that said, "Welcome to the family."
Hello, you are listening to NPE Stories. This is a podcast where NPEs can share their story. I am your host, Lily, and I found out I was an NPE through an ancestry DNA test that changed my life forever. NPE is a term that stands for not parent expected or non-paternal event. This means that one or more of our parents are not who we believe them to be. NPE Stories is a podcast where NPEs can share their story of what their original family was like, how they found out they were an NPE, and what their journey has been like since the day they found out. Hello, listeners of NPE Stories. You are listening to Lily Wood. I am the host of NPE Stories, and I just took a wonderful month off, and I am back with season 5 of NPE Stories. I've been doing this a little over 4 years, and I took the month of July 2023 off from publishing any episodes, and also I did not check my email for a month, so I have a little bit of backup. If you've written me, I will be in touch with you soon. I had such a great month off. I spent July with my 3 kids. They are now 8, 11, and 14 years old. We did so many beaches and parks and libraries. I had so much fun with them. It was a very hot month. It was a hot month here in Minneapolis, Minnesota, where I live. I also took a lot of dance classes. I really worked on my social dancing. I love learning and moving my body. I took a few salsa classes and a lot of bachata and zouk classes. And zouk, if you're wondering what that is a Brazilian style of dance. I did a lot of social dancing and I did practices. I just had fun. I just had a lot of fun. I went out with my girlfriends and we went out almost every Saturday night. It was a great time. I have to say, personally, I've noticed this summer that I finally have the ability to read books again. I am usually a nonfiction reader. I go through lots of nonfiction books on biohacking, memoirs of adoptees and NPEs. And I don't know if it's my brain healing, but I mean, I'm sure it is. I can now follow storylines again. I can follow plots again. When I first found out I was an NPE, some sort of trauma happened, some sort of grief, and I was unable to pay attention to the movies I watched with my family. I was unable to follow storylines in books. And so I can finally say that is going away. I'm actually able to read a few chapters and comprehend. I don't know if anyone else has had that experience, but a little over 4 years in and things are coming back. Oh, my kids are yelling in the background, I'm sure, about Pokemon. anyway, I sat on my front porch a lot in my rockers and I read books. And so I'm feeling really good. I'm feeling wonderful. So happy to be back. And I need to thank a few wonderful people who have become devotees to my Patreon page. Thank you so much for donating. A special thank you to Melanie, Christy, Terry, and Dana. I can now afford my clean voice technology, and this is going to cut my editing time in half. I'm so excited. So thank you, guys. And here we go with the NPE story portion of the podcast. And welcome to episode 169. And today I am speaking with Amy. Hi, Amy.
Hi, Lily.
We've already started crying, so I think we're doing good. I think we're doing good. Thank you for doing this today.
Thank you for taking the time to be able to let me share my story.
I am a little rusty. I haven't listened to an NPE story in over a month, so I'm so glad to be back and glad to be doing this. And we are going to get right into your story today. So why don't you tell me who was in your original family and what's happened in your life since finding out you were an NPE?
Okay. So I kind of tried to put things in the best order that I can. My story is a little bit different. I know the end result is we've all learned information that we didn't know that, you know, obviously brought us to be an NPE. So I'm just going to kind of go into that and try to make it as less confusing as possible. So if anything isn't clear, please let me know and I can always try to explain.
Okay.
So to start off with, my mom had just turned 15 when she got pregnant with me. So she was very young and was still 15 when she had me. And my great grandparents actually raised me for the most part. We grew up in a town that wasn't super small, but wasn't like a big city either. So it was very easy to kind of know most of the people in that town, you know, just maybe one contact away from knowing somebody. So my great grandparents raised me. So I was told that when I was a baby that my mom, you know, definitely took care of me and, you know, would work and buy me cute frilly dresses and really, you know, kind of was involved at that point. I don't know what point my grandparents really kind of took over more of that responsibility, but I was still a baby. When I was about 2, my mom met my stepdad and they had 2 children together. So my brother and sister, I know technically it's half brother, half sister. We've never done that. I have a hard time saying half of anything.
Yeah.
And so my brother and sister are about 5 and 6 years younger than I am. And my sister and I grew up very close. And my mom just didn't fill the role of like mom. And so as I got older, I kind of, you know, carried on a lot of that role with my sister. Even though we didn't live together, I was always, you know, having her with me and being the big sister, you know, parent type. The home environment with my mom was not great by any means. My stepdad was an alcoholic. And so it was very chaotic. There was just a lot of, you know, yelling. Things were just not good and not where you would want to grow up. And so, but I still, at that point, somehow, even though I was growing up with my stepdad and my mom from time to time, then back with my grandparents, I somehow always knew just not to ask, where's my dad? Who is my dad? It was just something I knew not to talk about. And so, let me see, getting back to my grandparents. When I lived with them, there really wasn't any discussion about who my father was, but I think there might have been things I overheard because I don't know how I just would have known, hey, I don't have a dad around and that's normal and just don't ask about it. But being with my grandparents was probably the only time in my life that I really felt like I belonged and that I was safe. Sorry. I also knew, like, growing up, like, from a very young age, for some reason, my birth certificate did not have my father's name on it. It was just blank. And that was always something that just has bothered me and still bothers me to this day. I remember being about 5 and my stepdad telling me that I could call him dad. And I remember just responding, no, because you're not my dad. And then I will say, though, even though my stepdad was an alcoholic, out of both of my parents, he was the one that was probably more filling the parent role. He would have conversations with all of us kids and, you know, try to teach us things that were important. But he just couldn't, you know, the alcoholism was just too much. So at some point when I was in about 7th grade, my stepdad came to me and asked if I wanted to know who my dad was. He told me, I said, of course, yes, I wanted to know, but I was kind of taken back because this wasn't a conversation again that I would ever have with anybody in the family or that I would ask questions about. And so he got my baby book and he got that out and opened it. And he said, your dad's name is Steve and that he lived in the same town.
It was a very short conversation and we did not talk about it again after that. So knowing, you know, as a child growing up without a father and just kind of knowing that was always in the back of my mind, it's not something that I ever forgot about. It's not something that probably wasn't in my thought every single day. And then as I got older and I was in high school, you know, and I'm stubborn and I'm always going to get to the bottom of things. So I went through friends and learned that Steve, I learned where he lived. I learned that he had three sons. And at some point I had a conversation with my grandmother, my mom's mom, and she had given me more information telling me at the time that Steve was married, that he was married when he got my mom pregnant or when my mom got pregnant, and that my grandmother had tried to take him to court to establish paternity because she knew how important it would be for me to know who my father was. I was always told the story that Steve's family had a lot of pull in the town and that eventually the court dropped the case. Fast forward to when I was about 19, I became a mom and had my son. And at that time, it really hit me. And I wondered, how could a parent not want to know who their child is? And how could you know that you have a child out there and not care? And so I wrote a letter to Steve telling him who I was and about my life, and I never got a response. So a few months later, I received a phone call, and on the other end of the call was a voice, and he said, "Hi, Amy, this is Matt. I think I'm your brother." And he had found the letter that Steve had kept. Matt was a year younger than I was. And so for 20 years, Matt and I developed a sibling relationship. He had two other brothers that wanted nothing to do with it. And I understood because I didn't want to, you know, turn anyone's life upside down. And so I was happy, at least, you know, content knowing that I had a connection with some part of who I was, even if I never had a relationship with Steve. So just to back up a little bit, when I sent the letter to Steve, I told my grandmother and she gave me the court papers. And so she said, "These are yours and you can do with them what you want." I don't think that my grandmother ever knew the truth, but I think she must have thought something just didn't sit right. And so looking at the court papers, of course, I was, you know, 19, 20 years old, and I looked through all the medical documents. At the time, they didn't have DNA testing. They used your blood type and some other antigens and things that were in results. And they sent them off to three high-profile labs like UCLA and, you know, some places like that. And basically, two of them came back and said that I carried an antigen that would exclude Steve from being the father. And one of them came back inconclusive. And so me being young and naive and knowing that I have this relationship with Matt, I said, well, those other two are wrong. This one says there's a possibility. So that's the truth. So back to the 20 years that Matt had been in my life, I had now been a nurse for 15 years, but I always had this feeling of something's not right. There's something missing. And even though I'm so thankful to have had what I had with Matt, there was just something that I knew wasn't completing me. And so I pulled out the court papers again. I looked at them in 20 years. I'm now 40 years old, and it felt like somebody punched me in my stomach. I knew at that point that Steve could not be my dad. So I called Matt. He lived over 2 hours away, and he drove to my house. He looked at the court papers. We talked and we cried, and he said, you know, "Do you need to do the DNA test? I'll do whatever you need." And I know it sounds really stupid. It's the only word I can come up with to say, no, I can't do this. I don't want to know. Because to me, that meant that the only connection that I thought that I had with some part of my other life, the other half of me, would be lost. And then I didn't know what to do and how to handle that. So I confronted my mom on a phone call, and it really wasn't much of a conversation because my mom and I have never been close. I think being young and having a hard life herself, she doesn't know how to communicate. We've never spent time together. She just was not a mom to me. And so through this phone call that to this day, I can't even recall having with her, but I know that I did, I said to her, "This isn't right. There has to be somebody else. You have to tell me the truth." And after, you know, some time, she said to me, there is somebody else that it could be, but I never thought that, you know, that was a possibility. And I said, well, who could this be? And so she told me his name, Ralph Hensley. And when I say that I crumbled and that I couldn't even wrap my head around that is an understatement, because I am now 50 years old and this was 10 years ago and I knew what this meant for me. I always had a connection to that side of the family, although I did not know anyone personally except for one person in that family, and that was Barb. Barb was Ralph's dad, or Ralph's daughter. And to give you a little bit of history on that, Ralph was married to my mom's best friend when my mom got pregnant with me. Mm. And Ralph and his wife had a daughter, Barb, who was a year and a half older than I was. To make it more complicated, my mom's brother was married and his wife and Ralph's wife were sisters. Hmm. So growing up, Barb and I shared cousins because of their moms being sisters. And as we got older, we ran around together in high school. Barb and I looked so much alike that we would joke with people and tell them that we were cousins. And there were even times we would say we're sisters just to mess with people. And this was in high school. I also knew that Carrie Jane, was Barb's sister, and she had been hit by a car when she was 5 and killed. And so my dad's side of the family, and stop me if this gets confusing, I'm just trying to make it as simple as possible. But my dad's side of the family carries a cancer gene or a genetic mutation that's inherited. And it's associated with Lee-Fermini syndrome. And so there's a mutation that affects how your body stops abnormal cells from growing. And so cancer can develop anywhere in anybody's body that carries this. It's not a specific type of cancer. So when my mom told me that my dad was Ralph Hensley, I knew that my dad had died in 1990. He was 36 years old. So I would never get a chance to know him. And my sister Barb died when she was 25 of breast cancer. She had 2 little girls. My dad's mom, my grandmother, died when she was about 29. And so it's a long-standing history in the family of this inherited mutation and, you know, having cancer and dying young, which is also scary to me, because then what does this mean for me? What does this mean for my kids? And so after trying to wrap my head around all of this, it was just too much and I shut down. I couldn't even process knowing that I had lost so much before I ever had a chance to know anything. My mom couldn't understand why it was so upsetting to me. She always says, and still to this day, not because of our conversations, because we haven't had them, but through other family members, that she didn't understand what the big deal was. People get cancer and you don't need to know, you know, if you carry this mutation or this, you have an increased risk. So she very much dismissed that. So after trying to wrap my head around all of this, I, for about 8 years, I can't even describe the feeling of it. And I'm sure that a lot of people that have gone through this know when you just say that you shut down, it's a complete, I put it in a box, was off to the side, but it never left my mind. I just couldn't process it. And I turned 48. My husband and I had seen a 23andMe on sale. And he said, you know, I think you should do this. You know, at least it'll give you some information, not necessarily connecting with anybody, but just kind of, I guess, giving me a little bit of DNA information, whether it's my ethnicity or whatever it comes back with. So I ordered the kits and he sent his in. And mine sat on my nightstand for about a month. I still was at a point where I'm like, can I even do this? This is going to mean that Matt is not my brother. And I finally sent it in. So I got my results back and I matched with one person that I knew I couldn't connect on my mom's side. And so I knew it had to be my dad's side, but she had a different last name. And I went searching like we all do on the internet and, you know, obituaries and just anything I could find. And I could not figure out how this girl is related. And I'm thinking, oh no, could there be a third person? Who is this? Who is my father? So finally, my husband, he has been immensely supportive. to the point has really surprised me, because he has listened to my ups and downs and my crying and my feeling lost. And he's just been a complete support. And he said, you need to email her. So I sent her a message. And the next morning, I wake up to a response and I go running to my husband. I'm like, he messaged me back. Mm-hmm. And so I responded to her. They went back and forth with some messaging. And she said right away, I know you have to be on the Hensley side. And then I knew. I was like, okay. And so as I got to talk to her more, I found out our connection. She's younger than I am, but her father was older. And so my grandmother and her father, siblings, brother and sister. And when I say that I found her and I saw who, you know, her picture, for her to be, she showed up as a first cousin once removed. And it's like I'm looking at a twin. I mean, we don't look exactly alike, but I can see our features and our mannerisms and how we stand. And I'm like, oh my God, that's me. And that was the first time outside of my mom's side of the family where I was like, this is where I get some of, you know, who I am. And so she had given me more information. She had talked to me about who the other family members were, my aunts, uncle, people on my dad's family. And I reached out, I put a message together and I reached out to one of the aunts. And then my new cousin, Crystal, she reached out to the aunt and said, someone's trying to get in touch with you. Please look at your, you know, messenger. It wasn't long after that I had a message. And when I say that I fell to the floor, I am not exaggerating. I got a response from one of my aunts and she did not even hesitate. And she said, if what you're telling us is true, I've talked to my siblings and we want to meet you. Because I didn't know what to expect. And I knew I wasn't going to handle any rejection very well. And it's so hard, as any of us know, to put yourself out there and just wait until somebody else, you know, decides to respond to you. And so we continued to text. The first two things that she told me was, you have to get tested for this genetic, you know, inherited gene. And the second thing she told me is, you have a sister. And I immediately knew, I know I had two sisters that aren't here anymore, Barb and Carrie Jane. And she said, no, you have a sister, Leah. And I never knew about Leah. I don't know how, but I was very familiar with the Hensley family. And so I was so excited. I'm like, I have another sister. And then immediately after that, I was told that Leah was just diagnosed with a malignant brain tumor. She's 36 years old. 2 years before that, she had breast cancer, and then she had thyroid cancer. So in the midst of the family learning about me, they were also, you know, trying to cope with this new news with Leah and what she was going through. And the hardest part of it is that Leah lives in Spain. She grew up in the same town I did, and after graduating college, she moved to Spain, where she's lived for 15 years, and she's married with 3 kids. And she did not have an easy life. Her life paralleled mine in a lot of similar ways. wrap my head around this still. She didn't have an easy life. And like I said, our life was the same in many ways. She was 4 when our dad died. And so she doesn't have any memories of him. And so I guess that's one common thing that we have the support of each other to know that even though she had, you know, a relationship with him as a child, she doesn't recall anything. And I had no idea if Leah would want to know about me. I had no idea if she was too sick to even be in a place where she could even reach out to me. It didn't take long before I received a message from Leah. And she was so happy to know that I had reached out and she has a sister, because she had no one. I mean, other than our aunts and uncle and cousins live back here, she had no, you know, she didn't have any other siblings. She didn't have, her mom had died 2 years before that. So knowing that she had a sister, I feel like we had an instant connection. And at the same time, I felt like I was on this roller coaster of the up and down of, oh, you have a sister. Oh, wait, she has cancer. Oh, wait, is she going to survive this? Oh, wait, this could happen. And it just felt like a constant, you know, up and down.
I didn't even know that I could pray and cry so much for someone I'd never met. But I knew from the first time that I heard that I had another sister that I would always be there for her, no matter what. And I know that that is still true today. So about a week after I had reached out to my aunt, I drove down to meet my cousin Crystal that I had connected with. And the family had wanted to get together, and we had decided 2 weeks after the initial contact that we would all get together so that I could meet the family and they could meet me. Just a little bit of humor with my cousin. I was trying on outfits. I was super nervous and I didn't know what to wear. This is the first time I'm meeting somebody, you know, that I had a relationship or, you know, relation to on that side of the family. And I was taking pictures, sending them to my friend, and I accidentally sent them all to Crystal. And so she responded back and I was mortified. I'm like, oh no. And so she responded back. They all look great. Pick whichever one you're comfortable in. So it was just a little like icebreaker for us. And so anyhow, 2 weeks after I initially made contact, my husband and I drove the 2 hours to meet my dad's family. When we finally met, it was definitely bittersweet because I was meeting family that I'd always wanted to know, but my dad wasn't there. Barb wasn't there. I'll never know Carrie. I had a grandfather who passed away. I had an uncle who passed away. And so you're meeting all of these people, but knowing that if I could give anything, I would want my dad to know that I existed and that, you know, I'll never hear his voice. I don't have videos. I don't know the type of person he was. I mean, I have stories, but I'll never even hear his voice. And so it was a pretty amazing day. When I walked in to meet my family for the first time, they had all stood in a line. I just went down the line and they all hugged me. And then they had a cake made that said, "Welcome to the family." And then they had a table that had a picture of my dad set up on it. And they had a frame they bought for me to be able to put family pictures in of everyone. And then, you know, some other knickknack things that said, "Every family has a story, welcome to ours," and little things like that. And they had printed out hundreds of pictures, and we sat for a long time and went through each picture. And my aunt wrote on the back of the picture who each person was. I mean, back to great, great grandparents. And I just got to listen to the stories of family and how things, you know, some history there, which was so amazing. And my dad, he was a biker. And so my cousin, who was there at that meeting, brought out my dad's first motorcycle jacket, and he had given it to me. And that was really special. And it's something that I still keep to this day, because I don't have any part of him besides that. I can't get any of that time back. So there were a lot of tears, obviously, you can guess. And it was just a really emotional day. But when we left there, my husband looked at me and he said, "That is your family." It was so crazy how similar you can be to people. And I know people have two sides to a family, but I never had a connection like that on my mom's side. And it's very different on that side. And my dad's side is very family oriented. They're a big family, but they all still are involved in each other's lives, and they're very supportive of everyone. That is just a huge difference in our families, and something that I've always wanted because I'm very family oriented and I didn't grow up with that. So leaving there, I just all the way home thought, how can I walk into a family that I've never known and just feel instantly like I belong and like I've always been there? And so even though my dad didn't know about me, everyone in the family, my aunts especially, have told me over and over again that if my dad had known, he would have been in my life. And there is no way he would have not acknowledged me. And I can't explain growing up, you know, especially as a child being young, and then as a girl and going through high school, as young as 5 years old, I remember thinking, looking in the mirror and looking at myself and thinking, whose eyes do I have? Whose nose do I have? Who am I? And growing up in high school, I was, you know, would very much act out, and I was doing things I shouldn't have been doing. And it was just, I felt like I was angry. I didn't have a dad. I didn't know who my dad was. And all I knew was I had a dad that didn't want me. He didn't care if I existed. And, you know, that really can mess with you, you know, even as an adult. And so I carried that with me my whole life until I was 48 years old. And I feel like just a snap of the finger, just knowing that my dad would have cared and he would have loved me and he would have acknowledged me, has changed my whole self-esteem. It has changed who I am to the core, because I know that I would have mattered. And I didn't have to grow up thinking that I wasn't important or that I was a burden or that somebody didn't want me. And so that, to me, has changed every part of my life. You know, again, so the other thing I would say is that I haven't had much of a conversation with my mom, like I've mentioned. We've just never been close. And it's a hard relationship to explain, because I feel like my whole life, I've always given my mom grace. Even being young, my sister and my mom really don't have a great relationship. And I would always tell my sister, you have to meet her where she's capable of meeting if you want a relationship with her, because she just isn't able to do it. And I recognize that she was young, and I'm sure she has a lot of things to deal with. But I will never understand, as hard as it is for somebody to maybe talk or have a conversation, why she can't discuss this with me. You know, being a parent myself, whatever her reasons were to keep this, you know, not something that she shared with anyone, I feel like once it came out to light, If I were in that situation, I feel like I would need to sit down with my child and say, this is really hard for me to talk about. What information can I share with you that'll help you? Or at minimum, just be happy that I have found this family who has been so welcoming and who love me. And my mom isn't happy about that. She is angry about it. And my dad's family has been nothing but kind about my mom. You know, when I've struggled with how I feel about things, you know, they also have been very, you know, supportive to say, you know, she was young. It was almost 50 years ago. Times were different. Most important, you're here and we have you in our life. And so to me, that says a lot. But I think my mom, you know, kind of looks at things like everybody's against her and it's all about her. And she doesn't recognize that this is about me. I have a right to know who my other family is. And I also have a right to be happy and to feel good about myself now. So the other thing I would say is that during this time, over the last 2 years, it's a lot to take in. And I've pretty much lost contact with my sister and brother on my mom's side. There were a lot of other parts to that, but we had never had any issues until this. And so I think it was just too much. And I don't think that they could understand all the processing that you go through, and you kind of lose yourself for a while. And there were many other things that happened over this year and a half that made things extra hard. And so we're at a point now where, you know, maybe at some point we can reconnect, but I don't know that that will be anytime soon. My brother had contacted me a while back, actually right at the beginning of this, a year and a half ago, through text. And one of his things he said to me was, why do you think that you can just walk into that family story and just be part of it? Mm-hmm. And that is something I will never forget, because walking into their life, I have never felt like they feel obligated. I've never felt anything but complete like inclusion and love and support. And I can't express how kind they have been. And now looking back, I tell my aunts, I don't remember life before 2 years ago. Like, I feel like this is where I've always been. And, you know, I told my brother, where was I supposed to start? I was never given a chance. I never knew the truth. And it took me my whole life to find this. And so, you know, I feel like that side of my family just all the way around is not supportive much of anything. Last summer, Leah finally got through her treatment, and she was able to come back to the States for a month with her husband and her kids. And she was able to stay longer because at the end of her time here, my 11-year-old granddaughter and I were going to fly back with her just to help her come back with the kids, and her husband would only stay here like a week and then go home. So we did that, and we had a wonderful time. So we spent 6 weeks last year getting to know each other, you know, just spending time together and enjoying our time. And when we got back from Spain, the day after we arrived home, my 5-year-old granddaughter died unexpectedly. And when I say in the last year and a half, my life has been turned upside down. And to know that my mom's family is more focused on how they feel about me having a wonderful other side to my family who has been so supportive, and they are more focused on that than the hurt and the pain that I have gone through in the last year and a half, is really hard to put behind you and even want to try to repair. And I don't know that it is repairable. But I really truly believe that Leah and I were finally brought together. I think that our dad knew that we needed each other, and he knew that we would always be there for each other. And I don't know if my sister feels like I replaced her, but there has to be room for everybody in my life, because I will never not acknowledge who I am, who my family is, and the people that are so good to me. And that is a hard boundary to set, and I've lost a lot of people along the way because of that. I will not be quiet about my name. My biggest heartache out of all of the NPE struggle that I've gone through is knowing that I still have a birth certificate and my father's name is listed as unknown on there. And in the state of Illinois, they don't care. There is no way to change it. I have roadblocks, and they have just told me over and over again that basically the father is listed for responsibility reasons. And as an adult, there is no need to change it, because they, of course, don't look at it from a genealogy perspective or just how somebody feels. I'm 50 years old now, and it is still just as important to me that my father be on my birth certificate. And I wish that that was something that could be changed, moving forward. So I know that it's kind of complicated to go through the whole story and kind of explain things. Matt and I still keep in touch. He's a wonderful person. He's amazing. I have this new family who every day I wake up and feel so blessed to have. I have to mention, too, I have my aunts and my uncle. When I first reached out to them before we met, they called me one at a time. And it was like they were just waiting to not overwhelm me. But I got home one night and my uncle had called me, and it was the first time that I had heard anyone's voice. And I cried. And I don't think that they'll ever truly understand what it means to have a connection like that, or to wake up every day, there's a holiday or a birthday, and get a text from them, you know, saying, "Happy birthday, Amy," or "Merry Christmas, Amy," because I don't have that. And that makes my heart so happy. Like I have this true connection now. Another time, it was the first night I stayed at my aunt's, and I felt ridiculous because I'm like, I am this 48-year-old and I am laying in my aunt's bed, and I felt like a kid at Christmas. And I'm like, I am staying at my aunt's. This is my sleepover at my aunt's. And so it's just been, I couldn't be more blessed. And I don't even know how to explain it to anybody. I've not heard like a lot of stories that are similar to mine, but I know that all the feelings are very much, you know, the same as just wanting to be wanted and not wanting to feel like you don't matter. And for me, that was the best thing that could have came out of this. The sad part for me is that it took so long. And I wish that I wouldn't have shut down for those years I did, just because I was too scared to know the truth, because I didn't know what was on the other side. And, you know, that would have put me in Leah's life a lot sooner. And my aunts and uncles and cousins. And I have to say also, for being such a big family, my cousins, like when I meet them, there is no, it's like I grew up with them. Every single person has just included me, and I don't feel out of place. And it's just amazing. And so that's why I asked you about using my dad's name in here, because I'm proud of that. And I'm married, and obviously I wouldn't change my name, but that's my identity. That's who I come from, and it's who I am. And so that means the world to me. So that's my story.
Oh, I had some tears listening to that, Amy. I'm sorry your original family hasn't just provided you with so much love and support, especially after such a heartbreaking year.
It's definitely been a challenge. It's been hard.
How is Leah?
She is doing amazing. She completed her treatment. She had another cancer that came up, but was able to have surgery, and that is now okay. This gene, it's a lot of times there will always be another cancer. And she's amazing. She's optimistic, and she's a good support to me. There's a lot of times I reach out to her and I'm like, you're going through all of this. And she's like, you have real, you know, things too. And so I can see through her and what she's gone through where it helps me be able to, you know, be a support for her. But she's doing great. And we will always have our connection, and we message each other multiple times a week, and we'll always be there for each other.
Have you ever gotten the testing for this? It sounds like a horrific gene.
I did that right away. And the day before Christmas last year, I got the call from the genetic counselor that I do not carry it. Which is a relief, but makes you feel extremely guilty too, knowing that, you know, not guilty, but like, why did they have to have this? And how do I not have it? And if you could take some of that away so that, you know, for Leah, that she wouldn't have to go through all of this.
So. Now, Ralph Hensley, your birth father, do you think he ever knew you were his daughter?
No. That's one thing I asked my mom, and I said, did you tell him you were pregnant? And she said, no. And I said, so what happened? You just like disappeared and cut ties? And all of this is through text messages, where the most I get from her is a yes or no. So I kind of have to guess on the questions, and then I'll get the short response. And so my understanding is that he didn't know that she was ever pregnant. Because of how closely tied and, you know, entwined my mom and my stepdad are with the Hensley side of the family, I find it very hard to believe that my mom, I know she knew, and she would have never seen Barb and not thought, oh my gosh, her and Amy are twins. Like, we look so much alike. Mm-hmm. And I do remember in high school, you know, hearing my mom say, you don't need to be hanging around with the Hensleys. They're going to get you in trouble, and meaning Barb. And now I feel like that's the reason, you know, why those comments were made, because she didn't want us to, you know each other. And I also do remember, when my dad died, I remember my mom calling saying, I just want to let you know Barb's dad died. And I never thought anything about it because Barb and I were friends. So I thought she was just telling me, and I was like, oh, okay. You know, that's awful. I feel so bad. Now looking back all these years later, I feel like it was her way to just let me know, you know, that my dad died, but she would never tell me. And my stepdad and my mom both were very intertwined. My mom's brother and my uncle on my dad's brother vacationed together. It's just so crazy, all the little things that I was always just one person away from knowing the family, but, you know, just close enough, but so far. And so it's to know all the little intricacies of, oh, this person knew this person, or, you know. Yeah,
that's got to be so surreal to think back of your times with with Barb and hear that was your sister you were with.
That was, I play that over in my head so many times during the day because I can remember specific times of us and we were both so similar. And and it just makes me laugh. And, you know, it's just, and it hurts because had we known, I don't know if that would have been good or bad, because I think we both had really, we were kind of crazy teenagers and we might have gotten into a lot more trouble together. But definitely, I wish that we would have known because that would have given us, you know, a lot different experiences and we would have had more time together.
And Amy, I forgot to ask you this, but would you ever be open to having any NPEs contact you if they had any questions?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I'm open to anything. I know it takes all of us to kind of get through all of this.
Right. Yeah, we have our own little small community, but it seems to be getting larger and larger.
Yeah.
with every new DNA promo sale.
Definitely.
Okay, so if people wanted to contact you, how could they do that?
My email, it's B like boy, E-N like Nancy, A-K-R-N @yahoo.com.
All right, I will put your email address here in the, I'll link it in the show notes as well. And Amy, thank you so much for sharing your story today. With you. I had some tears. I cried with you. And I appreciate you coming on and sharing all of this so much. It's hard to talk about this stuff.
It is hard. And I really just want to say thank you to you because when I first, you know, found out all of my information and I was trying to Google and research and I came across your podcast and I would listen to it every single day. And it truly is the one thing that made me feel as normal as I could, knowing that there were other people out there and that it wasn't just me feeling like I was losing my mind and going crazy. And it's just a huge support. And I know it takes a lot of time for you and this big community just helped kind of give us the support. And I cannot thank you enough for that. So the only other thing I would add is if anybody knows of any way to advocate or help get information changed on your birth certificate in Illinois to have your father added, my dad's family is willing to do, you know, court-ordered DNA testing or whatever it would take. But if anybody has any information, I'd love any feedback.
These stories are here for us to identify with. If you are an NPE and would like to share your story, email npestories@gmail.com. You do not have to give any identifying information. If you are an NPE and would like to share your story, I'd like to hear from you. Subscribe to this podcast to hear more. Come heal with us.